I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you this morning, and I always come with a certain amount of fear because I don't want to ever say anything that's not the truth and that the Lord wouldn't view in a graceful manner. And so my prayer is that you continue asking the Lord to bless us all here today as we go through and study the Word of the Lord. Many of you know that I enjoy politics a lot and talk about it from time to time, and I like to tie in many times things going on in the world that we hear about with things from the Bible. On Wednesday nights here a while back, we were talking and we talked about, you hear the issue in the political world today about ISIS, the Islamic terrorist. And of course, we have a group of people that calls it ISIS and a group of people that calls it ISIL, I-S-I-L. And we explained the difference of that one Wednesday night about how that's actually Bible-based. ISIS is Islamic State in Syria, and ISIL is Islamic State in the Levant, L-E-V-A-N-T-E, Levant. And the Levant is just the Holy Land. It's the expanded Holy Land. So it's one says ISIL, you know, the terrorists are not confined just to Syria. They're engaged in the entire Holy Land. And so that's the difference between those two. And that's just a comment as a way of introduction, because this week I had a subject on my mind, and you know, I felt like it's one of those times when, you know, Brother Kenny and I talk from time to time, you run out and you don't have anything on your mind, and so you're trying to figure out what you want to talk about. And I had a subject that I kind of put some thought into, or was trying to knew I needed to study on it. And then I turned on the TV and watched the news, and we had a presidential candidate who got himself in trouble, not one of the major candidates, but one of the other ones. Got himself in trouble because he didn't know the location of a city. He didn't know what was going on there, and it was Aleppo. Aleppo, and he got himself in trouble, and a lot of hitting on him by the media and by the other candidates because he didn't know about Aleppo. Aleppo is the center of the Syrian crisis right now. There's two major cities in Syria. Damascus is the capital, but then there's Aleppo. And in Syria right now, they're having a civil war. I don't want to bore any of you, but just to summarize it, they're having a civil war, and the head of the nation is actually fighting some of the people that are going against him, and he's killing a lot of Syrians, and he's killing a lot of innocent people. There's allegations against him, and he's using all sorts of improper methods to kill people. I don't know whether he's using gas or what kind of things, but he's killing them. And the Russian people generally side with him, and of course the Americans and most of the other world side with the rebel Syrians. And so that's the big issue, crisis going on right now in the Middle East. And that's why the issue comes up about how we feel about Russia. And Russia has sided with this Syrian dictator Assad, who is pretty mean to his people. And the United States would like to see him removed and thrown out. Anyway, they're killing a lot of Syrian people, and the Syrian people are leaving home, trying to get away from this war, and they're all going up to the northern part of Syria. The place that they're hanging out around in is Aleppo. Aleppo is the major city up there, but it's the entire area up there. It's just generally called Aleppo. And that hit me, and I sit there and watch that and says, that's what I'm studying. And it hit me, and I thought, well, maybe the Lord's got a funny way of talking to me, especially to use presidential election newscasters. But I find myself in that boat from time to time. So my subject matter this morning, and I hope we'll get back to this, I hope I'll tie this in a minute, is the tribe of Dan. We know there's 12 tribes of Israel. Jacob had 12 sons. Those 12 sons, they became known as the 12 tribes of Israel, or the 12 large families of Israel. That's how the nation of Israel was formed, is out of these 12 tribes. We know they eventually left Egypt, and in over 40 years got up into the Holy Land, invaded the Holy Land, and they each took a particular area of the Holy Land, mostly Judah and Benjamin in the south and the other 10 tribes in the north. They split after King Solomon died. The northern part was taken over by Syria. The southern part, of course, was later taken on by Babylon, but has now since come back in as a nation. Don't think it's the same religious body as it once was and has the same religious significance. A lot of churches do, and they'll preach about Israel today. Israel today is in the same location, but it's not the same body it was that receives Christ's blessings. Anyway, that's what I want to do is talk to you about one of the tribes. The fifth son of David was known as Dan. Excuse me, the fifth son of Jacob was known as Dan. And Dan has particular significance in the Bible, in the nation of Syria. He caused some problems for the rest of the Israel people. He was the first one, his tribe, that family, large family, was the first ones to get into the idolatry that eventually led most of the nation of Israel into idolatry, and the Lord became unhappy with them. Just to give a little reference to this before I get in, we're going to end up in Judges chapter 17 and 18, if you want to look at that, and those of you who have your Bible. But first of all, I'm going to start with Revelations chapter 14. Revelations chapter 14 talks about a number of people, 144,000 people who have been redeemed by the Lord. And you get down here, and at the bottom of these, bottom of verse 4, it says, "And these were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb." We're told that there's 144,000 people, and there's lots of interpretations on this. 144,000 people who have already been redeemed. Already been redeemed. They are God's elect, but they are among His elect, but they've already been redeemed and claimed into heaven. And because they are redeemed of God's Lamb, means they've already come out of the graves. To figure out who that 144 is, you know, it says it talked about they were the first fruits of the Lamb. First fruits has to do with an old law back in Leviticus that one of the feasts they have is first fruits. And it's one of the things you had to go through under the law. If you were a farmer, Brother Kenny was in this boat for a long time, and many of you may have been. If you were a farmer and you went out and you raised grain, is the one I like to think of. If you raised grain and the first time you had the first fruits, the first good parts of your crop that produced, you took those and you offered those first fruits to the Lord. First fruits of grain, first fruits of cattle or sheep or whatever, you offered those to the Lord because that was the first. Take it off the top and offer that to the Lord. And the priest would literally take a sheath of grain and hold it up in the air and wave it to the Lord. And if the Lord accepted it, then he would bless the entire crop. That's why you always offered the Lord the first fruits. You offered him the first of the cattle. And if the Lord accepted that offering, that sacrifice, then he would bless the entire herd. He would bless whatever your crop was. That's one of those laws that Christ said he came not to break, but to fulfill. It's one of those laws. It had to be a first fruit offering. So if you jump over to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, I believe it is, we're told that Christ made the first fruit offerings for us when he died on the cross. That's what he did. He made that first fruit offerings that the entire amount of God's elect, the entire harvest, all of God's people would be accepted. Christ came and died for God's elect, a set group of people. And when Christ died on the cross, he made that first fruit offering. And that's over in Matthew chapter 27. You see, when he died on the cross, it said once he died, then there was a great earthquake, and there was a thunder and an earthquake, and the veil of the temple was opened up, so now we can approach the throne. Then it makes a statement, and there was an earthquake, and many people came out of the graves that day and went into the holy city of Jerusalem. It's not talking about the actual city of Jerusalem. The holy city would be heaven. A group of people came out of graves that day and went to heaven, as and everybody believes, and most old Baptists I know believe, that was Christ's first fruit offerings. If the Lord accepted those first out of the grave, then he would accept all the rest of us that are among his elect. It was accepted. Christ died for them. He was the sacrifice. He sacrificed himself and made that offering. Those 144,000 that we're talking about in Revelations, that was the 144,000 that came out of the graves back then. That was a representative of the first fruits. So we see that in Revelations chapter 14. But now if you go back to chapter 7, where did those 144,000 come from? We're told that in chapter 7 of Revelations. It talks about the 144,000. And if you get down here at verse 4, and it says, it's John talking in his vision, "I heard the number of them which were sealed, redeemed, and there were sealed 144,000 from all the tribes of the children of Israel." All that first 144 came from his chosen people, Israel. Now, the rest of us have been accepted because we're spiritual Israel now after that. But of those 144,000, there were more than that in Israel, but there was a first offering of 144,000. And he goes through here and he tells them, of the tribe of Judah, 12,000. Of the tribe of Reuben, 12,000. Gad, 12,000. Asher, Naphtali, Manasseh, Simeon, Levi, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph. He goes down and lists all the 12 tribes. Each one of them had 12,000 redeemed in that first redemption, the first fruits offering. Dan is not listed. Dan is the only tribe that didn't have any representatives in that first fruit offering. Dan's not there. Why? Well, Dan has a little bit of history with it, and that's what we're going to go back and cover now. Where Dan created some problems for the nation of Israel when they were first put in Israel, and that's what I want to talk about, because I believe not only is it good history to know, but it also has very much relevance to us today in our practice of religion today, how we go about worshiping the Lord. What happened with Dan is a great example, I believe, to all of us. Now, we're going to end up in the book of Judges here in just a minute, chapter 17 and 18. But in chapter 20, chapter 20 of Deuteronomy. Now, I'm just going to skim some of this. We're going to spend a little more time in Judges, but I want to try to give you the setup. In chapter 20, the Lord was telling the people of Israel, all 12 tribes, when we go into this holy land, you're going to take it over. I'm going to give it to you. But right now, there's a bunch of bad guys there. They've invaded that land. They're there temporarily. I didn't give them that land. They've taken it over, but it's land I'm giving to you. I'm giving to you the 12 tribes. 12 tribes and the Levites. Levites, of course, were the priests. They didn't get any land, but the other 12 tribes got land. But in chapter 20 of Deuteronomy, the Lord says this. Now, when you go into battle, there's some rules I want you to follow. Number one, chapter 20, verse 1, when thou goest out to battle against the enemies, and you see horses and chariots and people more than thou, every army is going to be stronger than you, bigger than you, have more horses and have more chariots. Be not afraid of them, for the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Don't be afraid. They're going to be more than you and bigger than you, but I'll be with you and we're going to whip them. And he goes through here and he gives you a number of things that he gives instructions about when you go into war. Don't be afraid. But he gets over here and tells them about the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th verse. He says, now you're going to come across some cities that you've got to go in and fight. These are cities that are not in the land that I'm going to give to you, but they're on the way there. Anytime you have to fight somebody that's not part of the Holy Land, I want you to go in and tell them, we're ready to make peace with you. And we'll make peace with you. We won't kill all of you, but you got to become servants to the nation of Israel. If you'll do that, then it says, the Lord says, you can take their spoils, take their country, keep the women and the children especially. They become a tribute. They become not a slave, but a servant to the people. He said, but, gets over here and says now in verse 16, but in the cities of these people, which the Lord thy God doth give thee for an inheritance, everybody in the Holy Land, everybody in the Levant, we talked about earlier, everybody there where I'm giving you this land, thou shalt save alive nothing that breathes. You got to kill them all. Thou shalt utterly destroy them, namely the Hittites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hittites and the Jebusites, as the Lord thy God hath commanded. And why do you do that? That they teach you not to do after their abominations, which they have done unto their gods, little g on gods. So should ye sin against the Lord your God. Don't let them influence you. They're great sinners. You know, people say, well, that was kind of unfair when to kill all those people. These people were doing abominable things. They were throwing children to fire. They were having all sorts of sexual immoralities. They were just extremely sinful people in that particular area. And that's who he's listed off. He said, you go in them and you wipe them out completely. Kill everybody, men, women, children. Break up all their idols, destroy everything, burn their cities, and start over. You don't leave a one in the area that I'm giving to you. That was his commandment to him. You get over here in the first chapter of Judges, and we know from Joshua chapter 19 and 40 is where the Joshua divided up the lands. He divided up the lands in chapter 19 of Joshua. I'm not going to go there. But he divided up all the lands, including the last one he divided up, gave was Dan. He gave the last one to Dan. Dan had a little bit of history. We don't know much about him until we get over here to this chapter 18 of Judges. But Jacob, the father of Dan, said when he blessed all his sons, he said, now Dan will judge his people, but Dan is like a serpent. He's like a snake. He's going to bite the heel of the horses and cause people to fall backwards. He's going to cause them to backslide. Dan's got a little problem. This is my son, and I can see him, and he'll be a judge, and he's my people, and we're blessing them. But Dan has a little problem like a snake. He tends to bite the hand that feeds him sometime. Moses, when Moses over in Deuteronomy was dedicating it for the people, and he said this about Dan. Dan is like a lion's cub, but he will leap later. A lion's cub is very timid as a cub. Grows up, though, to be a mature lion and gets very bold. Timid at first, but gets to be bold later. And then and I just gave you the book of Joshua there, where Joshua dedicated the lands, and he gave Dan. Dan was a tribe of about 64,000 warriors. That's men of war. Now, they had wives, and they had family, and they had old men, they had children, and they had a lot of that, but it was 64,000 men of war that were of that age. That's how they numbered all of them back then. And the land they gave them, it was the last one that Joshua allotted, but he allotted them the smallest territory. Now, they were the second largest tribe, second to Judah. They were second in terms of number of men of war, but he gave them the smallest piece of land, but it was a very good piece of land. It was right over on the western side of Israel, right next to the Mediterranean Sea. It included the town of what is today Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is the capital of Israel. Not Jerusalem, but Tel Aviv is the capital of Israel. Jerusalem is still the holy city. But it was the land between Tel Aviv and stretching out from the Mediterranean Sea up into the mountains before you head over to Jerusalem. That's the area he gave Dan. It was a very small piece of land. Now that's Dan, 64,000 people of men, warriors, which means he probably had four or five times that many actual people in it. But they had the smallest allotment of land, but it was good land. Now let's go over here to the book of Judges. We'll start at. First of all, go to the first chapter of Judges, and we find out they have taken over the lands. They're going in to conquer, and that's what the first chapter is about, how all the tribes conquered. Judah and Simeon, verse 17, they slew the Canaanites that inhabited Zebeth and utterly destroyed it. Children showing the tribes doing what the Lord commanded. Problem is, you get over here about verse 27, and it said Manasseh, neither did Manasseh drive out the inhabitants of there. Verse 28, and the Canaanites, they put the Canaanites to tribute, ask them to serve them, but they didn't drive them out. Well, the Lord said, you make servants out of those non-city people, those people that live in cities that are not in the Holy Land that I'm giving to you, but everybody else, you totally wipe them out. Verse 30, neither did Zebulun drive the inhabitants out, but the Canaanites continued to dwell among them and became your tributaries. They're treating them like they were cities outside of the Holy Land when they were inside. Verse 31, neither did Asher drive them out. The Asherites dwelt among the Canaanites. Neither did Naphtali drive them out. Get on to verse 34 now, and it said, and the Amorites forced the children of Dan into the mountains, for they would not suffer them to come down to the valley. Not only did Dan not go in and fight, they were meek and timid like a young cub lamb, like a cub lion. Not only that, they got driven out. The people of Dan got driven out of the fertile valley and up into the mountains. They had to live in the mountains and caves. They were the one tribe that didn't do what the Lord commanded. Now, evidently, they were timid and got afraid. And as the Lord said, he said, I'll be with you. But they got afraid because that's where a lot of the giants were over in that land, over against the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. So that's where we are right now. I'm going to take you to Judges chapter 17 now. 17, 18. Let's talk about Dan. We know who Dan was now. The fifth son of Jacob. Had some problems. Both the father Jacob and Moses recognized Dan's not as strong of a tribe as it ought to be. But Jacob says, but he'll get stronger later on, the tribe. And we're talking 64,000 warriors. Now, to get in that, I'm going to go into Judges 17, 18, and I'm not going to read it all through, but I want to go through and tell you the story of what happened here. The story in chapter 17 sets up what happens to Dan in 18. There's a little bit of talking about what was taking place here with another man, but it's going to have a big impact on chapter 18 and the tribe of Dan, or the Danites. And what I think we have here, and the lesson I want us to see, we talk about, and I think you can divide this into three segments, about what happens when there's confusion in the family. Family is the core part of God's plan for the earth. The family is the core of all society. It's the core of all nations. It begins with the family, but it's going to show there's confusion in the family and why there's confusion. There's confusion in the ministry. When there's confusion in the ministry, we'll see the suffering that takes place. And then all of this, the confusion in the family, the confusion in the ministry, causes confusion in society. This is what happened to Dan. Dan was the one that first got in trouble in the nation of Israel. And I think we're about to see why. And that's why I think Dan's name doesn't mean everybody was eternally lost. None of us were in that 144,000 first redeemed either. We all have hopes to go into heaven. There's a whole lot more people than the 12,000 out of each, exact 12,000 out of each one of those tribes that are going to heaven. But nobody from Dan was chosen to be redeemed first. They kind of missed out on that little honor, you might call it, because of, I believe, their actions and activities here in the book of Judges that I think give us lessons today. Let's start with chapter 17. It says, there was a man of Mount Ephraim. Ephraim was one of the children of Jacob. Mount Ephraim was a mountain range. It wasn't a single mountain. It was a mountain range. It was just above Dan. It's just above, it's kind of northeast of the tribe of Dan along the area from the coast inland. And it was just northwest of Jerusalem, so of Judah and Jerusalem and Benjamin. So it's kind of just above it, but it's on the way north. If you're heading north, which is where you, I think you'll see we'll talk about in a minute, it's headed north of there. And so there was a man of Mount Ephraim, which is just above the tribe of Dan, whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, now we've got an interesting situation here in verse 2. He goes to his mother and says, I knew that you had 1,100 shekels. Today, they approximate that's about $750. A lot of money to a family like this, small family. He said, you had 1,100 shekels of silver that were taken from you, in which thou cursest, use curses, and you've been talking about it to me in my inner ears. His mother had $1,100 stolen from her, and she put a curse on it. Cursed to whoever stole this money from her. But she was particularly jumping on her son in his ears, talking about it all the time, complaining. Makes me think she might have thought he did it. And she put a curse on it. Says, you've been speaking about it in mine ears. Which means she's particularly been harping on me about it. So he said, behold, the silver is with me. I'm the one that stole it. You know, you already have here example here in the family of kind of what's going on in this family. He stole from his mother, stole 1,100 shekels because he idolized it. He coveted it. He wanted it more than his mother, thought he deserved it more. We see this problem happen in society today from time to time. He certainly didn't honor his father and mother. I think I counted about 6 or 7 violations of the Ten Commandments in this. He said, I took it, but the mother forgave him and said, bless thou of the Lord my son. And said, he restored the 1,100 shekels. And then she says in verse 3 here, she said, my plan was I had wholly dedicated this 1,100 shekels to the Lord. That was my plan, was totally give it to the Lord. You'll remember a story in the book of Acts, a man named Ananias and his wife Sapphira, I believe that's her name. They said they were going to dedicate some land to the Lord, the entire land, and they went and sold it. And they said, well, that sold more than we thought it did. We're going to keep a little back for ourselves. We're going to give some to the Lord, but keep some back for ourselves. Peter caught them in the lie. They both died in the result of that lie where they had dedicated some to the Lord and then kind of backed out. Well, she says, and the scripture here says, we had wholly dedicated it to the Lord. This 1,100 shekels also is interesting because out of Dan, one of the members of the tribe of Dan was a man named Samson, who just died in chapter 16 of Judges, just before this. Now, Judges 17 and 18 probably took over a period of time. It didn't fall right at the end of Samson. It took a period of time for what's taking place here. But 1,100 shekels has particular significance among the book of Dan because that's what the Philistine paid Delilah, exact same amount the Philistines paid Delilah to find out the weakness of Samson. So there's got to be some, not just coincidence, something symbolic here about the 1,100 shekels within the tribe of Dan. So the mother anyway says, but I had completely and wholly dedicated this to the Lord. So that's what I had planned to do, was give it to the Lord. Verse 4 says, yet when he restored his money to his mother took 200 shekels. The $700, she took about $125. And said, I'll give this back to you, but what I want you to do is take it to a founder, silversmith, and make a graven image and a molten image so that we can worship our God. So already, you have here within a family is where we're supposed to do most of the teaching. We're taught throughout the Bible. Most religious teaching takes place in the family. They've been told over and over and over and over again, just repeatedly in the scriptures, not to worship idols, not to create idols, not to create graven images. She said, I was going to dedicate all 1,100 shekels to the Lord, and then she only did 250. And she said, and I want this 200, I mean, not 250, 200 to be made to create a graven image and a molten image. A graven image was one you carve. You carved out an image of something, and then, but they used silver and gold to cover it with, put in eyes on it, things like that. So it had, the silver was used with it. And then a molten image. They took the silver and also made some kind of image. And these were their gods, to be their gods. Pure idolatry. Verse 5, and the man Micah had a house of gods. He had a shrine. A shrine of idolatry there in which he was worshiping. And they put this molten image in it and this graven image in it. And it says he also made an ephod and a teraphim. An ephod is a robe that a priest would wear. Not just like the ones that they had in the tabernacle and temple, but it was a copy of them. An ephod was a robe you wore to do the worship service. Teraphim were other little activities, little symbols, things used in a cult type worship. They could have been cards, reading cards. They could have been like a paradise where you would roll them, where you things. It was things you would use to tell the future. It was like a cult or a fortune teller would use. Those were things you used in a cultish type worship service, more idolatry. He created them himself, and he made the ephod. They went and had a molten image made and a graven image made. I mean, they were heavy into idolatry in this family. It says, and he consecrated one of his sons who became his priest. He ordained his son to be his priest. One, in the Bible, over in I believe it's in Numbers, the God said all the priesthood will come out of the tribe of Aaron, and any strangers try to get in that, they shall die. So, I mean, it was strictly against the law. You didn't make your own priest. Man didn't make his own priest. Lord determined who the priests were going to be. Back in the Old Testament, the Lord determines who the priests are going to be today, who the ministry is going to be today. Anytime we try to get into man-made ministry, we're in trouble. And that's what's taking place here. Micah not only made himself a shrine of idolatrous worship, he also ordained his son, everything here in violation of what the Lord has just told them under the old law. And verse 6 sums it up. And in those days there was no king in Israel, but every man did what was right in his own eyes. I'm smarter than God. I know what I need better than God knows what I need. And that's what was taking place. And you start off with the family here showing all sorts of family, theft in the family, and the mother actually encouraging the idolatrous worship service. You go into verse 7 now, and you're getting into problems with the ministry, confusion in the ministry. Not only did he ordain his own son in violation of the law, he wasn't out of the tribe of Aaron. He was out of the tribe of Ephraim. That's where they were. Gets in verse 7, it says, and there was a young man out of Bethlehem, out of Judah, who was a Levite, and he sojourned there. And the man departed out of the city from Bethlehem and sojourned until he could find a place. He's looking for a job. He's a Levite out of Bethlehem looking for a job. Levites weren't supposed to have to look for a job. Levites were supposed to be supported by the other tribes. What's apparently taking place here, he's traveling looking for a job, and he's left the city of the Levites. You go over there in Joshua and read again, and the Levites were dedicated certain cities they were supposed to stay in. And to go worship, you went to those places where there were Levites. He's looking for a job, which means he wasn't being supported. It means probably a lot of people guess that this was where the people failed to support the ministry. And that's one of the downfalls, not only the ministry, of society. What you're seeing here is a degradation of all the things that the Lord has set up. We have a family that's having problems. Then we have a ministry here that's not being supported by the people, and that's one of the problems. When you see people, there's a lot of people that are not in church this morning. A lot of people who don't give, and we don't believe in tithing. We believe in giving what's in your heart, what you feel like you should give. The Lord will put that on you in your heart. There's no mandate that you have to give. But there's a lot of people who have gotten into mandates so they can try to make sure they're supported in the ministry, but this man wasn't being supported, and he's out traveling looking for a job. He's coming from a city, Bethlehem, which is not a Levite city, and he's going to a place that's not a Levite city. Here we have a minister not following his own oath, and probably because he may not have been supported in doing so. But he came, this young Levite traveling, came across the house of Micah, as he journeyed along. Verse 9, Micah said to him, "What are you doing here?" He says, "Well, I'm a Levite looking for a sojourner where I may find a place to work," is what he's talking about. And Micah said, "Hey, dwell with me and be unto me a father and a priest." Not only I pushed my son away, he won't be the priest anymore. I got a Levite now. Come and be my priest. And he says, "Look, I'll pay you. I'll pay you 10 shekels of silver by year, a suit of apparel, and victuals. I'll give you room and board and clothes, and I'll pay you to be my priest. Come and be my priest." The man says, he stayed, and the Levite was content to dwell with the man. Hey, I got a job, and I'm a head priest for this man and his house of shrines. A Levite became the head priest for the house of shrines. If you go over here to what you have here, and he is a hired priest, I want to take you real quickly to John chapter 10. You don't have to go there. This is where Jesus Christ is talking to himself, and he says, "I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for his sheep. But he that is a hireling, he that is hired out to do a job, a hireling and not the shepherd, whose own sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming and leaveth the sheep." A hireling sees the wolf coming, and he hightails it out, leaves the sheep unprotected. "And he fleeth, and the wolf catches them and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth because he is a hireling and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and I am known of mine." What we have here is what Christ described as a hireling. He's allowed himself to be hired off. And again, one criticism of the Levite was that he was probably traveling because he was not supported by the people. But now he has become a hireling, not truly a shepherd. He's allowed himself to be hired in this manner. So this is a criticism here and a confusion of the ministry. The Lord is showing us an example here of how we have downfalls in our society, beginning with the family, beginning with the ministry in the church. And that's what we've got going on here. And the Levite was content, and Micah consecrated the Levite. Micah has no business consecrating anybody. This is what happens when we have men taking over, creating churches and creating ministries not according to the Lord's plan. And he lived in the house of Micah. And then Micah said, "You know, I have a Levite to be my priest. I have my own priest." First of all, if you're a priest or a minister, you shouldn't belong to anybody. You should do the Lord's work. You should do what the Lord directs you to do, whether you get paid or not. It's a minister's job to be a shepherd, not to be a hireling. It's the people's job to support the shepherds, not expecting anything as hired, but to do it for the benefit of their support. Now we're into chapter 18. Now we have, and that's a setup. You got Micah there with the house of God, his own priest. Now let's get into chapter 18, which is where I wanted to be. We'll spend the rest of our time there. Dan, we talked about Dan. Dan was given this tribe of Dan was given this particular land over next to the Mediterranean Sea, leading up in the mountains. They got run out of it by the mountains. They didn't like the land they were given. They were jealous of everybody else. Everybody else stayed where they had gotten land and fought it out. Dan didn't fight it at all. They didn't trust the Lord and didn't fight. Instead, they didn't like what the Lord gave them. You know, many of us are in that same boat. They looked and they say, "Everybody else got bigger land. We're big people. Everybody else got something bigger. Why didn't I? Why didn't we get that?" Did they go back to the Lord? Did they stay and fight? Did they wait on the Lord to give them the land to help them out? No, they said, "We got to do better than this. We got to get our own land that we don't have any problems like everybody else." Chapter 18 says, "In those days there was no king in Israel." That's been repeated throughout the book of Judges, telling us how the downfall of the people. And in those days, the tribe of Dan sought them an inheritance to dwell in. They're not happy with what we got. It hadn't worked out for us. Lord, you did everybody else good, but you did us bad. We ever get to feeling like that? Lord, you've treated everybody else good. I wish you'd treat me as good as you do everybody else. So they said, "Let's go fix the problem ourselves." So they sought for them an inheritance to dwell in, and unto this day all their inheritance had not fallen unto them among the tribes of Israel. Everybody else got their inheritance. We didn't get ours. The Lord gave us a bad spot, and we got run out of it. They didn't do a thing that the Lord told them to do to get it and secure it. And the children of Dan sent five men. They picked five men as spies. And they said, "Go find us a different place to live." And these spies, what they're about to do, they're going to leave where Dan's allotment is, and they're going to travel about 100 miles north to the city of Laish, I believe, L-A-I-S-H, Laish. The city of Laish. Now, let me tell you, stop here for a second. The city of Laish, later they got it and renamed it Dan. And where's that city located? It's 100 miles north of Jerusalem, roughly. 100 miles north of Jerusalem. It's about 2 miles from Aleppo. It's in the exact same area that they're talking about today, where all these Syrian refugees are going. Now, I don't have any specific tie-in, but a presidential candidate got in trouble for not knowing where Aleppo is. You're now smarter than a presidential candidate. You can say, Aleppo is right next door. A suburb of Aleppo is Dan, where all the tribe of Dan went. In the book of Judges, chapter 18. You'll be smarter than this, and that's what I'll tell you. Then that, I'm sitting there, and I'm going, I'm studying this when they're talking about that, and I'm going, I can't believe this, you know. I can't believe it, because the Lord puts things like that on your mind. But they sent these five men up, and they're going to search us out of place. First thing they do is they head north. Well, look, they come across Mount Ephraim to the house of Micah, and they spent the night there. They stopped off at Mount Ephraim. You see that in verse 2. Spent the night there. When they were in the house, they heard the voice of this young man, the Levite, and they say, we know you. You're a Levite, and you're from down south. They could tell by listening to his voice. Either he had an accent that they recognized, or they had seen him or met him before. Maybe he had been in their area one time before he lost his support. And it says, what are you doing here, and what are you doing in this place? And in verse 4, he even admits. He said, this man Micah, he's hired me, and I am his priest. He's admitting that he's a hireling as a priest. I'm a minister to one man because he pays me. And they said, well, if you're a minister, then ask God to bless us. And he does what he does. He does when he knows how he gets paid. So he blessed them. He's a yes man. He said, you bet, go on your way and the Lord will guide you. That's how he blesses them. But they met him. Now we're going to come back to him in a minute. It says, and then the five men, verse 7, they departed. And they went up to Laish, and they saw that the people there were very vulnerable. They were quiet and secure. They were very vulnerable. They made no friends. They had no allies. You know, we see this in the church sometimes when churches isolate themselves and they lose their friends and lose their allies. This is the reason we have fellowship among our churches. When we get in need or having troubles, we have churches to come and visit with us and help us out. You know, when we have conference, when Brother Kenny Cole's conference in January, we invite visiting brothers and ministers to sit and counsel with us. When we have an ordination, we call on the other churches to come in and assist us and support us. We have a church that gets in trouble, we send them money. That's why it's good to have allies. Laish had no allies at all. It had no magistrate, had no sheriff, had no priest, had no pastor. Laish was a peaceful, quiet community. It was isolated. They had nobody to take care of them. It says to put them in shame, and that was mean to arrest them. If you had a sheriff would come out and stop any nonsense and protect the people, put them in shame, anybody that tries to attack, arrest them. They had no friends, no allies. They didn't have any business with any man. So they saw this city. They turned around, hightailed it back down to where all their other Dan people were. And that's what verses 8, 9, and 10 say. It says, hey, we found the perfect place, Laish. People are weak. They're vulnerable. They got no friends. They got no sheriff in the town. We can go in there and we can take this place and we can move up there and we have a place to live without having to put up with all these Philistines and Canaanites that ran us out of our place down there. Surely the Lord's got to bless this because we're going to take charge of it ourselves. The Lord didn't give it to us. We're going to take charge and go do it our own selves. Again, part of the downfall of the tribe of Dan. In verse 11, it talks off and says, okay, so the Danites said, let's go do that. Now you see where Jacob said, the tribe of Dan is meek and timid, like a lion's cub, but it will grow up to be a mature lion. Here is where Dan becomes a mature lion. It says, they took 600 of their men and appointed them with weapons of war. Took 600 men and they armed them to the teeth. You've heard that phrase used. What does that mean to be armed to the teeth? You know, you means you got your full body armory. They equipped them well. The full body armory, didn't have guns in that days, but they had slingshots and they had swords and they had spears and they had shields and they put armor up and down their body. And then to make sure they had plenty of weapons, they took a knife and they carried it here so they could fight. And then they could get that knife quickly. That's where armed to the teeth comes from. You carry that last knife and you put the blade in your teeth so that I've got it ready to grab at any point in time. That's a little scary looking too. It's scary to the enemy to see a guy coming at you with a knife in his teeth. That's the way these guys were. They've got six of the meanest, baddest people they have and armed them to the teeth with weaponry. And they headed north, 100 miles north. They're heading up there north to take over the city of Laish. And verse 13, it says, "And they passed thence unto Mount Ephraim, came back to the house of Micah." Micah's back to have a big influence on this people from Dan. "Then answered the five men," oh yeah, this is where we stopped when we were going up there looking over this place, and this is where we found that Levi priest. And oh yeah, they got a priest here, and they've got a shrine, and they've got ephods in it, and a teraphim, and they've got two graven images. What do you think we ought to do? And 600 men, I think we ought to take that house of shrines and take it with us. We'll have us a worship center when we get up there to this new place. So the 600 men, they got the Levite priest and held him there and talked to him at the gate of the house. And those five spies went in there and stole the graven image, the molten image, the ephod, and the teraphim, And that's covered over, That's covered over the, that shows 16 they stood by. Let Brother Jesse get back there. Thank you, Brother Jesse. These five men went in and stole the stuff while the 600 armed men stood outside with the priest. And when the priest looked and saw that they were bringing out all these idols and they were fixing to steal them from his master, did he stop and defend his master? Remember what he is? He is a hireling. You think he stopped in and said, "Hey, you can't steal those. Those are my master." He says, "What are you going to do with those?" They fessed these things in verse 19, and they said unto him, "Hold your peace. Put your hand on your mouth. Just shut up and listen to us. Have we got a deal for you? How about if we pay you more money and you come with us and you take us and show us how to worship these idols? You know, you can come with us, and not only that, right now you're a priest to one man. You can be priest to an entire tribe, family of Israel. You're going to be a big shot. You're going to be a big shot priest, and we'll pay you more." Did he turn it down? Verse 20, "And the priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and the teraphim and the graven images, and he went in the midst of the people." He joined up real quick because he's a hireling. Again, this is a problem with the ministry. Do I want to go where I get paid good? Am I going to go where I can make more money? You know, if another church over here in town offers me more money, am I going to walk away from the sheep because I'm a hireling? I'm going it for money? Any man that's doing this for money shouldn't be here. But you're here, you need to support the man that's in the ministry to make sure that he doesn't do that, to make sure he's doing it for the right reasons. If he's doing it because he's a shepherd, that's why you want. That's who you want in a ministry, is a man and shepherd. You've been blessed with, especially two or three wonderful pastors recently, Brother George, Brother Kenny, who they're dedicated to seeing the people. I've heard Brother Kenny talk about, you know, the money issues. And it doesn't matter. He goes out and visits people when they're sick. Brother George was the same way. You've been blessed with good shepherds here. And you should thank the Lord for that. But we also need to support them for these exact reasons. You don't find many members. And I'll say this among old Baptist churches. We don't get up here and preach for the money. That's not why we're here. We're here to do it regardless of whether there's any money in it or not. But it's the duty of the people, and that includes us, ministers, to support the ministry and the church. And the priest's heart was glad, and he took all the idols with him and went with them. So they turned and departed and headed north. And it says they put the little ones and the cattle in the carriage before them. Now they know Micah's going to be unhappy when he gets home and finds out everything's been stolen. All his gods have been stolen from him. Let's talk about that. If these idols are your gods, and they can be stolen by five men, not much of a God. You have a God that can't be stolen from you. You have a God that is in here. And nobody can take that away from you. Nobody can steal that from you. When you have the true Lord as your God, he can't be stolen. They're worshiping idols here. They're worshiping something else that can be taken away from them. Brother Kenny was making fun of me this morning because I was talking about my football team lost last night. And he said, "Isn't it sad when your idol loses out?" And that's true. That is so true. I laughed because that's what's on my mind this morning when we were talking about that. When we make the things of the world our idols, our gods, isn't it disappointed when we lose them? You've got the Lord is your God. You don't have to ever be disappointed about losing him. He doesn't lose. We don't lose him. Sometimes we abandon him, but we don't lose him. He's always there, and he's always there ready to help you, even when you've gone away. And that's in the book of, that's what we just talked about in the book of Samson in the chapter before this. Samson thought he'd lost him, but the Lord came back to him, and the Lord will always come back to his people. Anyway, they took off, and they knew Micah was going to come up and approach them from the rear, so they put the women and the cattle and all their goods in front because they were going to be attacked from behind as they headed off from Micah. Now it said Micah, verse 22, Micah got all his friends together, and they hurried up and tried to catch up with the people of Dan and overtook them. And they got up and stopped them, and the people from Dan turned around and says, "Why are you bothering us?" He said, "What do you mean, why am I bothering you? You took my gods. You took my gods. You took my priests. You took everything else. Those were mine." You know, it's sad when you have to start arguing about taking your God away. There's real confusion in the society when you don't realize your God, your true God, cannot be taken away. Verse 24, "You've taken away my gods that I made and the priest, and you're gone away. What more?" The people of Dan looked at him and said, "Don't raise your voice at us. You make our people angry and we'll kill you." Now, we're fighting over keeping our gods, keeping idols, and we're willing to kill over them. And said, "It'll take your life." And Micah saw that they were too strong for him, and he turned around and went back home. I'm sure he went back and created him some more gods. Get to chapter verse 27 now. We've only got three or four verses left, nearly finished. The people of Dan take these things that Micah had made, and they take them and they head up to Laish. The people there that were quiet, secure, vulnerable, and it says they smote them with the edge of the sword, and they burnt the city with fire. Remember, Laish wasn't part of the Holy Land. It's north. It was not part of the land that God gave them. And the Lord said, when you go to those cities outside, you try to make a peace treaty with them first, and you don't kill them. You make them servants to you. You make them tribute to you. They owe you. And you're going to work with them, and you take them and use them. Instead, they did exactly the opposite. They didn't kill the people back in the Holy Land they were supposed to, but they did kill the people outside that they weren't supposed to. Again, you have a total violation of all the things that God told you. They burnt the city, and there was no deliverer. There's nobody to save the people because they were alone. And they built a city in that place, and they called it Dan. Again, Dan is right next door, suburb of Aleppo. I forgot my word now. But it's right there. And when y'all see this deal on Syria, that's the exact place we're talking about, where all those Syrian refugees now, over several million of them, are gathering up. They're living in tents and cities. It's a real tragedy what's going on there. But that's taking place in this exact area where the Dan people went and took over and changed the city to Dan. And he said, "The name of Dan, their father, was born here." And it said, "And the children of Dan set up the graven image, and Jonathan," that was the Levite that went with them, "the son of Manasseh," he said, "his sons were priests unto the tribe of Dan until the days of captivity." This young Levite, he became the priest for the Dans up there, and they started worship, and they set up them Micah's graven images, which he made all the time the house of God was in Shiloh. What the reference was, where the Lord told them, "I'll give you a place to worship. I'll give you a place to worship." It's Shiloh, and later he changed it to Jerusalem. They weren't supposed to worship anywhere else. The Lord had commanded them, don't set up any shrines. You can't have a private shrine. You got to go worship where I tell you to go worship. That's with Levite and the Levite cities, particularly at Shiloh. Later he moved it to Jerusalem when David moved the tabernacle to Jerusalem. But you see, after Solomon died, the king, new king of Israel that was for the northern, he set up Dan as one of the primary places to worship. We find this later on in 1 Kings. He set up Dan as one of the primary. Dan became one of the primary worship centers centered around these graven images and idolatry they made. Dan was the tribe that led eventually all the other nations, especially northern Israel, into idolatry. Dan was the first place to be taken over once the Assyrians, now in Syria, took over. I'll conclude with this because we've seen right here is the confusion that takes place beginning with the family. It's where this all started, with Micah making these images within his family, with his mother. He and his mother, They violated, I think I counted six of the Ten Commandments they violated there in that family setting. Then they got into the ministry. First he tried to ordain his own son. Then he took this Levite, made him a hireling. They confused the ministry. And this hireling, this Levite, who should have known better, supported all these idolatries. Then you have the people coming over and taking it over, and they're making that their main worship center now in Dan, totally violating all the Lord's specifications and requirements for worship of him. What took place with Dan is also can take place with us if we're not guarded about it. Hopefully we can be guarded about it, but we got to be guarded to take care of your primary study and instruction begins in the family. It then goes to the church, but you got to make sure you have a shepherd and not a hireling, and you've been blessed with that here. Then from there it goes out into society. Everything begins with the family. If we don't have a family that worships God, and we don't have a ministry that follows God's commandment, God, and we don't have a society that generally is based on the Lord, then we're going to have problems just like Dan did. I'll close with this. In James chapter 4, I believe James summarizes what's taking place here. Where do come wars and fightings among you? Why do you fight? Come they not hence, even as your lusts that war in your members? All wars come from lust. All fighting comes from lust. Ye lust, but ye have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. War is not going to do you any good. They never do. They result in they're vain. Yet ye have not because you ask not. Why don't you ask me, is the Lord saying here? Why don't you ask the Lord? We take matters in our own hands. If I don't have enough money, I'm going to go take it in my hands and get money. If I don't have the family like I want, I'm going to go do it on my own. I'm not going to follow the Bible. I'm smarter than God is. So if I don't like the way things are going for me, I'll just do it myself. He says, you don't have because you ask not. You ask not and receive not because you ask amiss. Lord, bless me to go out here and earn more people. Lord, bless me to go over here and take over, do things that are actually against him. He said, you ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lusts. I'll skip a few verses. Verse 7, he said, submit yourselves therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh unto God, and he will draw nigh unto you. We're not talking about eternal blessings here. We're talking about timely. If you weren't a child of God, you wouldn't be reading this and trying to take heed unto it. But the Lord says, if you'll draw, and all the people of Dan were not, many of them, most of them, probably all of them may have been the Lord's people. But they didn't draw nigh unto God, and God didn't bless them. If you'll draw nigh unto God, and they got in a hurry and didn't want to wait on the Lord, and we see how many that doesn't work out so many times. They weren't satisfied with what gave them. And what the Lord gave them, instead they had to go out and take care of their own. That was the first step, and they went downhill all the way from there. We have a wonderful Lord that blesses us when we go to him and ask for that blessing. When we go with him in all humility and we give him all the glory for all the blessings we have, he blesses us with that. You've been very kind with your attention. My prayer is that the Lord will richly bless you. Okay, at this time, I'll ask for Brother Keith.